This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Daniel Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Deadline's new Hollywood podcast. My name is Dina Ray Ramos.
And I'm Amanda Nduka. Ooh, excuse me. Almost there. So for this episode, we have the star, or one of the stars of the new season, season three of Masters of None, Naomi Aki. And you might know her from Star Wars, The Rise of the Skywalker, from Doctor Who. The end of the Epic World.
Yeah, end of Epic World. She's just, you know what? After this this third season of Master of None, people are going to be paying even more attention.
Yeah.
I think Naomi's, she's counted, but I think this season just gave her so much time to shine. And it's like, I drank it up, man. Yeah,
me too. I was just talking about it. Like I, you know, as soon as I watched it, I was hooked. It's one of those, I mean, obviously Masters of None, we know that the show is quality, you know, like Aziz Ansari.
Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang.
And Lena Waithe, like, you know, they bring the quality. So it was like, we knew that this was going to be something special, but you guys, honestly, this season really, really got to me. Like, it was such a great season.
It's only like five episodes.
Yeah, five episodes.
But they're like so cinematic.
And, right.
It's basically, Naomi's a new character on it, plays Lena Waithe's partner.
It focuses sort of on their, the whole season focuses on their relationship.
Yeah. And it's just to see two queer women of color, like two characters, queer women of color, just having their lives fleshed out, and it's like, just the ups and downs.
Yeah.
It was like so refreshing to watch, and it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot, you guys. The set design, there's a house that they use in this film that they built, which was amazing, but it was, and the way they set it up, Naomi talks about it during how the set designer took elements from their own real life, incorporated into the building.
Into the house. Elements.
Yeah, so really cool. And like I said, this, I think a lot of people are going to relate to the story, especially Naomi's character, Alicia, and her journey. She goes through, I mean, she has like an IVF journey. We talk about that. Very important story.
And it goes deep into it. And then it taught me a lot, because we do see a lot of these stories about single women or women in TV and film who are trying to have babies, but it's always so surface, I think. I don't know what happened.
This is definitely the most intimate portrayal I've ever seen an IVF storyline. I think I can't think of another one that I've seen that's been so intimate and so like detailed. It was, like I said, it was very powerful. Like it got me thinking about stuff and about, you know, my life. And we talk about it, about how like a lot of the struggles that these women go through, you know, you kind of empathize, but you never really think about.
Yeah,
it
does bring up these moments, you know.
Yeah,
Or like these thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely makes it takes you there. And then we also talk about.
I know what you're gonna say.
So you guys, if you listen to this podcast, you know I talk about Whitney all the time. Whitney Houston, I'm a stan, and Naomi is actually playing Whitney in this upcoming biopic. That's being directed by Stella McGee, who's also a friend of the podcast.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh my God. I forgot to mention that.
We should have, but we talk about the project.
We talk a lot about Whitney, and we were just so excited to talk about
getting into the Whitney headspace.
Yeah, and after watching this season of Master of None, you are going to, I hope,
you know, that you think, well, I know that Naomi's going to eat it. She's going to eat her role as Whitney.
Yeah.
That makes that sounded weird.
But we know what you mean. Masters of None, May 23rd. Everybody should check it out.
Watch it.
I mean, like I said, it's a great, they came back. I mean, this is like the first, they've been gone for, I think,
we didn't even know. 4 years?
4 years. There was a time where they didn't even know a third season was going to happen, but very, very
we're so happy there is one. Yeah.
So, May 23rd, you guys, everybody check it out. And without further ado, here is Naomi.
Oh, and Naomi, your frames. I love your frames.
Your glasses are so cute.
Okay, can I just say, these frames are from Master of None. I stole them after.
Oh my God, breaking news.
Yes.
Breaking news. Yeah, because
I'm
going to
tell
like,
Alan, Aziz, and Lena.
No, seriously, like, because Kate, I was working with Kate, the designer, and like she had like the wardrobe for Alicia is just like so good, and she had these glasses. She was like, "Do you actually wear glasses?" I was like, "Yeah, I have a prescription." She put the prescription in, and I was like, "Well,
oh my gosh!" Okay, so then
yeah, they're gonna go to waste if you didn't take them.
Yeah, exactly.
Who else is gonna have them?
Exactly. Speaking of Masters of None, Dino and I got to see the third season. I'm not done yet. I'm on the last episode. We're into it. Like
Amanda stopped watching so she could record the podcast.
I would have kept going though. Like I was literally like this. I'm hooked. Like it was so. Oh, I love the story. Such a beautiful story. Your character's journey is so beautiful.
Thank you.
We're gonna talk about that. And there's a lot of things I want to talk about. I mean, you've done so many things. You're doing so many exciting things and that are coming up that we're gonna talk about too. So we like to kind of start the podcast with just getting like to know your background and how you came into this business. How did you kind of find your love for performing? Was there somebody that inspired you or how did you get to this
crazy? Oh my God. Yeah. This crazy mad business.
Right.
I think I remember being five, my cousin, family friend, cousin, you know, same thing. Is an actor called Luke Youngblood, and he actually lives in the States now, and he was one of the first Simbas in Lion King, and I remember being five and going to see the Lion King musical in London and being just like mouth open, like this is the best thing in the whole world. And like I think from there I just kind of, I've always loved musicals and costumes and like making stuff. And I guess I just kind of, I didn't fall into it. It was quite like on purpose. When I was 11, I went to my mom and was like, I want to be an actress. Just out of nowhere.
And your parents are from Grenada, right?
Okay. Grenada. Okay, cool. Yeah.
So what do they think about you being in being in this business and performing?
Yeah. What's the immigrant family journey?
Oh my God. You know, I think like when I was younger, it was like, you know, you say a lot of things when you're young, don't you? And so I think there was a kind of like, okay, maybe that's a thing for now.
Right.
Make sure.
Right.
Get over it. But I think I as a personality, like I find a thing and then I like, I just love that thing. I just love it so much. And with this, it was that. And they're both like, my mum was so supportive to the point where like, I remember so when you go to drama school over here, you make like a statement, right? You got to write like a little essay. And the first one I wrote was crap. It was so bad that my mum lambasted me. She was like, listen, if you want to get into drama school, you're gonna have to write some better crap than this. And my dad is just like a constant pillar of support. I can't even explain in words how much his love and support means to me while I'm trying to figure out who I want to be in this industry. You know, I think it's one thing kind of, especially when you're a child of like, you know, parents of color. I don't know how you call it. Parents of color.
Parents of color.
Parents of color. That should be a new podcast.
More appropriately, immigrant parents. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, like my my parents actually were born in London.
So that would be my
grandparents.
Second generation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because of there was a thing in Britain called the Windrush era where people from the Caribbean, basically Britain was like, World War II is over, we need people to rebuild England. And then they were like, oh, we own the Commonwealth. West Indian people come over, the streets are paved with gold. And then the West Indians came over and the streets were not paved with gold.
Isn't that how they get us? Isn't that how they catch us?
Very familiar.
They're like, ooh, we have some goodies and treasures for you.
You want to come over here? Yeah. And so my grandparents are you know, native Grenadian, and then you know,
I like that. It's cool.
I think it's like it's interesting because you know I'm constantly thinking about like, what is it to be Black, but what is it to be Black British, and how is that separate from, you know, being African American, but also how is it similar? And like the thing I've been thinking about recently is like being West Indian and like the fact that, yes, like, okay, I'm from the West Indies, but people from the West Indies aren't actually from the West Indies. There was a native people there that got, you know, kicked out, or you know, many things happened and mixed and stuff like that. And when I think about like my lineage, you know, West Indians, I'm mixed with Scottish and French and all of these kind of colonial like things in my DNA. And so like it, you know, there's that feeling of like not really knowing where you're from. I don't know. I know I'm kind of from West Africa probably. But that's it. So I don't know, I'm just babbling, but you know, I think like
have you ever visited
not yet. When I was younger, it was like my parents would go back for like funerals, so they were like, you're too young.
Yeah
And then I didn't have any money, so then I couldn't go. But now I've got a bit of cash, but I ain't got no time, so
Seriously, that's how it's like that sometimes. But I mean, you've been a part of some really great projects like Doctor Who, The End of the Fucking World,
Asterisk World.
Excuse me.
My bad. I'm so sorry.
Shut up, having it.
No, we could cuss here.
Rise of the Skywalker, which is epic. And then, I mean, so how has it been navigating your career specifically with these huge tentpole franchises? How has it been for you?
It's a bit mad. I spend most of my time being like, how did I get here? Like, I'm from like Northeast London, kind of just chilling. I was never chilling. I'm not a chill person at all, but I'm very intense. But like, I don't know. I think it's just, I can't even put it into words. I felt like I blinked. One second I was about to quit acting. And I remember just being like, I'm tired, I'm broke, there is no one paying attention to what I can do. And so frustrated and hurt by the fact that, you know, when you feel you have something special to share and no one takes you seriously, and you're seeing all of your kind of other people, other counterparts just soaring ahead and being like, I'm getting older. Oh my gosh, I'm 29 now. Oh my God. But like, I think like, you know, there was just, you know, Skywalker came at a perfect time, because before that I was really close to quitting. So I guess with every job that comes along, and I think it's just weird as well, like being able to hold both like fear and self-doubt, and also knowing that you can do something quite special, and not trying to like marry the two, because it's like there's imposter syndrome, but there's also like, no, I can do this, no, I can't, like there's just this constant conflict that you know, I think it's supernatural as well. I think
that's kind of something that plagues at least the good people in Hollywood, kind of the whole the whole yeah. like
you have to specify.
Yeah. No, I right. like how you put that. It's like, oh, you have this self-confidence, but at the same time you have this self-doubt.
Oh
right?
my gosh.
And always. To balance those two is just yeah. a journey. It's yeah. like, and that's why everyone in Hollywood is fucked up.
Let me ask you, Naomi, does it get easier for you? Does it get easier for you? Yeah. Like as you get these big projects and
she's shaking her head, girl. Yes.
Like, it's yeah. relatable, right? Like I feel like a lot of people sort of, yeah.
So. It actually, if I'm being honest, it's gotten harder because, you know, I think, you do one thing, right? You do one project and you're like, oh, that was all right. Okay, cool. And then you do two. And then you're like, oh. And then especially if people are like, oh, she's pretty good. You're like, oh,
you have to keep,
shit, yeah. I have to keep being good. Right. And what does that mean? Like, and you know, I was just talking to someone today and I was like, you know, all I want to do, I just love acting. It's really that simple. Like, and sometimes it's hard to contemplate that now my acting career is changing into something that involves expectation potentially and pressure and other things that change it from its kind of purest form. And so I feel like a lot of my job right now is holding that still very sacred for me because it's a very, I feel like whenever I'm acting, I'm like in service to something. Like that's how it feels. You're like giving a part of yourself away. And I know that sounds super woo woo and like, oh, I'm an actor. But it does, it feels like it's a sharing place. And that's why I love doing it. And so I just want to hold on to that and not let, you know, other things get in the way of that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who said it. It's kind of like a lot of filmmakers or actors. It's like, once you release a film or TV series, it's no longer yours, right? It's like, it's out of your hands and, you know, how people take it is not in your control. Absolutely. And that's the fucked up part.
I know. Yeah.
But I mean, that's also like, you know, it's that is the magical part as well. Like, even for me, I want to be a writer. Well, no, Naomi, I am a writer.
Yes, there you go.
I like that.
Thank you. I'm trying to
yeah.
But like, even that, I'm like, I was talking to someone about that today and I was like, look, I want, when I make my work and release it, I want there to be discussion. I want there to be debates. I want there to be kind of investigating of the ideas that I'm trying to highlight. I think that's the healthiest part. My worst nightmare is putting something out there and nobody talks about it at all. I'd rather be really shit or really good. The kind of stuff in the middle I'm not interested in.
Makes sense.
And I do think, like, it sounds weird, well, for me at least, like during this pandemic, it's just like, you're like, either it's excellent or it's not. Mm. And like, we don't have time for middle ground.
Middle ground, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, cause like, I'll watch the trash. I will watch trash to come home.
100%. Oh my God, it's my favorite.
But like, it's that middle ground that you're like, I don't know if I want to invest my time in that, but you know?
Yeah.
But you know what? It's not middle ground. Is what? This new season of Master of None?
Nice segue, transition there. I like it.
Very smooth.
But it's very true. It's definitely not middle ground. Yeah.
I mean, well, first off, you know, Master of None, this is the third season. Yeah. Naomi,
a long time
involved,
coming, yeah.
Eva, I'm in it.
We've been waiting for this season for a while.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking to. But you know, how did you even get involved? Because you're also a producer, an EP. Is
that correct? Yeah.
How did you we'll get into this later, but you know, this is a different story. It's a different lens. But how did you get involved? And like, did they present the script to you first, or were like Lena and Alan and Aziz were all, hey, we saw Naomi
we
Skywalker.
She would be a perfect Alicia.
But how did you get, what was the story behind getting involved with the third season?
It was the normal kind of almost boring actor, get an email from your agents, hey, do you want to do this audition, as soon as I saw Master of None, I was like, oh, cool, they're coming back. And then I had to like,
right?
Then I had to like switch over to be like, oh, wait, they want me to do something in it. Okay. And so, yeah, I did the first audition, and that, you know, it was really cool. And I hadn't met Aziz and Lena at that point. I was just kind of riffing off of the script that they had given. The second audition, which was my last audition, was just one of my favorite auditions I've had. Is, you know, we were in a hotel room. I was in a hotel room with Lena White and Aziz Ansari, and we were just improvising like this couple in like different situations. And I feel like that kind of spirit has carried itself into the show, you know? And it's a spirit that was previously there in season one and season two, this kind of very kind of authentic, fly on the wall-esque kind of way of talking that didn't feel pushed or forced. So yeah, that's how I got into it. I mean, in terms of the co-executive producer thing, that happened after. Because there was just this really quite natural, I'm a collaborator, that's my background, you know, when I was in theater and stuff like that, and I love devising shows and stuff like that. So when Aziz kind of was like, hey, do you want to like do some writing workshops with me and like figure out who Alicia is and stuff like that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like my jam. I love that kind of stuff. So we started off with that. And then as we started filming, Aziz and myself and Lena and Alan were kind of all having conversations about the characters and decisions to be made and stuff like that. And so when we finished, I wasn't thinking about, you know, producer roles or anything like that. But Aziz called me like 2 weeks after we finished and was like, hey, like me and Alan were thinking about it. Do you want to come on as co-executive producer for the work you did? And it was just so lovely. I want a future in producing work for especially people of color, like and making platforms for people of color, color to tell their own stories and stuff. So I was like, oh my gosh, that's my first credit. It's like Master of None. Like that's
that's a good credit to have. It's also just this testimony to like what happens when you put people of color in power.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I love to hear that Alan and Aziz were all, oh look, Naomi did the work. Let's give her
work. Right.
It's so and it's that kind of pay it forward kind of thing. Like even for me in my little space that I have that I'm trying to build for myself, I'm just like, when I see someone who's like a bit younger than me, they don't even have to be younger than me, but especially like anyone who wants to get involved in this, I'm like, come through, bro. Like, come through. We need as many of us as possible. And it's not about like, to me, it's not about eliminating what's previously there. It's like enhancing it. It's like adding on to it. Like, let's just start like really mixing it up and having really cool conversations, because that's when really cool stories come out. Yeah. That's what we're in the business of, is storytelling. That's it.
Yes. I mean, like, there's just so much to touch on in this episode. I think what we see is two queer women of color just having this relationship and going through it. And I talked to you before, you know, in terms of, you know, with you, Aziz, and Alan and Lena. I don't know if this will air after Contenders. I'm not sure, but we talked before. Yeah. it just to kind of hear what they said, they were like, oh, we already knew the third season would be a total left turn from what we are used to. But also you mentioned this, it kept in the spirit of what Master of None is. This like very Verite kind of, you know, these are just young people living their lives. But also at the same time, I remember when I don't know if Amanda, you were the same way, when I was like sitting down to watch the screeners, I was just like, oh my God, I'm gonna have a laugh. And I was like, wait a second, this isn't a laugh. This is kind of intense. With this season, you know, and you know, it's been established, but also it's been gone for, I want to say four or five years.
It's been a while.
And we were like, are they even coming back? So to see it kind of just like blast onto the scene and be all, this is what it is. And they came in hot with this very specific story that we don't see often, and there's a lot of these moving parts. How was it? You mentioned, you know, collaborating was great, but did you kind of, how like apprehensive or you know, not scared. I don't want to say scared, but you know, because they're, you know, Alan and Lena and Aziz have worked together before. This is an established, franchise. I mean, you did this with Doctor Who and Rise of Skywalker too, but this one you're like hella invested. How was that like?
I keep on pinching myself, like even Aziz, like me and Aziz, like because he's called me the other day. Like I was like, oh my god, like what is Aziz is calling me and we're having like a 20-minute convo. I think like it's strange, you know, it forces you to stay in the moment, you know what I mean? And I think like for me, outside of like there is such a, with all of these kind of very much established projects that were established before I got involved, it's a benefit because luckily, and I don't know how this has happened, I've been a fan of all the things that I've like been in. So like, I think there's this kind of like understanding of the tone and of the people who are creating it that kind of gives me an in. But at the same time, it's weird, you know, like it's kind of like, God, are people going to be interested? Like the same thing happened with the End of the Effing World, where I was just kind of like, people watch it for those guys. They just have to put a new character in. What if everyone hates it? You know, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And with this one, it felt like my biggest concern was like, wait, I think this thing is meant to be funny though. How am I gonna do that? I'm like a big old like crying dramatic actress. Like, I am funny. Like,
but you bring it.
Like, yeah,
you bring it to the ball. You bring it.
I mean, I try, but it's like these are funny people. I'm not funny. Like, they can be funny on purpose. I'm funny by accident.
Funny by accident. That's the name of your memoir.
I
funny
like it.
By accident. No, but know, but there were plenty of dramatic parts, but there's also these sweet moments that you and Lena share, and I think, and how it kind of does it. Kind of hop around time. Oh no! I think it's kind of linear.
Yeah,
there's like a time jump. I know that. Like there's a time jump between. Yeah, but I really liked. I mean, her journey, her IVF journey is obviously a really prominent arc of the series, and I really. Just everything that goes into it, like, you know, you hear stories about it, people and their journeys and stuff, but you never really get to see it, especially for people who are not familiar or maybe have. And it was just an eye-opening thing to watch. And I'm just, oh my, it takes all this stuff to get to have a baby. Isn't it crazy? It's like,
it's like all United States was all, hey, it's bad enough that we treat women like shit, but let's make it even worse.
Especially when you're, you know, an LGBTQ couple, like
a woman of color, even.
Or women of color. So I want to ask, what were you like, sort of, what were your reactions when you read the story and everything? Like, mind blown.
Mind blown for me too. I think like this is the thing, and I think this is what's so interesting about the show. Like, I didn't know, you don't know what you don't know, right? And two things, like, and this is again why storytelling is so important. It wasn't until I was in the show that I was like, wait, I've never seen a show that centers around two Black queer women. Mm. And it wasn't in my brain, right, because it wasn't in front of me, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just how humans are. It doesn't make you a bad person, but you just, if you're not presented with that thing and you're not like part of that community per se, then you just live your life just with the things that are around you. The same thing with the IVF. I think like I had watched documentaries about it in the past, but they're not necessarily for me, and the way I absorb information and stories didn't spark a kind of the same kind of understanding of what it means to go through. It was quite more factual.
Right.
Watching the story and then knowing I was being a part of telling that story of IVF it felt very important and it was a bigger challenge than I was used to, because this is something that Aziz had found real information on. Like, her story is based on stories that he has heard. You know, we had Aziz and Lena, you know, going to interview doctors and stuff to get the right information to make sure it was authentic and accurate. And that meant, you know, when we found out that like there is no insurance code for single women or queer women who want to have a baby on their own, Aziz only found that out while we were filming, and he was like, we have to put that in, like people have to know, you know. And so there was this kind of really cool feeling of like, it felt like a rebellion almost. It was like shining lights on things that we just in our normal daily lives just don't think about.
And, right.
You know, good stories do that, I think. And you know, it's great when you get to be a part of a show or make a show where you are showing information about something, but you're not hammering someone over the head with it. You know, it's just there, it's presented, it's a reality.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
It's a, I mean, honestly, it's a bit, it got me thinking about, oh, wow, like, should I start thinking about, you know, it really did spark like a,
dude, me too.
You know, and I think like that's, and like you said, it didn't hit you over the head with anything. It just really showed her journey in a very intimate way. And it really like just sparked a lot of thought in my head and a lot of, first of all, how many women go through this? And for myself, like how, you know, what does that mean for me as a Black woman who, I mean, I don't have a partner right now, but if I wanted to, you know, go through the journey by myself, like what kind of hoops do I have to jump through? It was just very interesting things to see, and I can't wait to see the last episode. I haven't watched it yet, but like seeing you and Lena together and your scenes was
we won't spoil anything,
but it really tugged on some heartstrings. Like I really hope everybody gets to see this and also gets to experience this, because I think this is a very important story. So I want to ask you, what do you hope people take away whenever they see this story?
Oh gosh, God, I sounded so posh there. Oh goodness, I think the big thing for me was like, putting normality into things that I think we sometimes, in Lena's words, and Lena put it perfectly, you know, if you're covering a story about someone who's queer, let's say for instance, there is this thing about like making them either a hero or they're perfect or they're kind of like leading the charge of like, you know what I mean? There's this kind of pressure to like have this kind of, I feel it as a Black woman, sometimes this kind of like, you have to be excellent. You have to be, and to show the humanity and to show the normality and the small moments that are exactly the same as any other relationship. Like that is to me, if there's any takeaway, like when I watched it, I was like, I immediately was just like, had that argument. I've said that stupid thing in bed. And that's what it is. I think it was just making it relatable.
Yeah,
it was so relatable. I was gonna say like watching it, that's like the first thing that came to me. Like this is a very like, I think anybody whatever background too, like it's a very universal story.
I think that was the thing that was great, is like we see, yes, this is two queer women of color, but this is like a relationship so fleshed out. so like kind of layered, and we see all dimensions of it. We see them having a good time. We see them hating each other. We see them joking in bed. It's and then I honestly, one funny part was like, again, not spoiling anything. I don't think. Well, what, you know, whatever. Nah. when Aziz pops up with his girlfriend, and then that awkward.
Listen, but let me tell you about the filming of that, because that was one of the hardest, longest days. Aziz is directing it and he's in it, and he's like running back and forth towards the screen to look at his own performance to direct himself. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
But I know that relationship between Aziz and his girlfriend.
That was like you said, the small moments in this series were really like, even watching you guys do laundry together and all this.
I love that scene.
It's like everything was just so, it just worked so well. And I just like,
it is refreshing to see, you know, two queer women of color and just even women like kind of just being there on screen.
And
just like living their life. I mean, like granted, Lena is smoking weed while writing a story, but you know, she's living her life.
She's living her best life too. Like, come on now.
In that house.
Everybody has that house. That house is amazing. That house. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But also, we learned that when we talked earlier, that it's not, you built the house, right? Like
It was on a set, and it was brilliant actually, because we had like 2 weeks of prep time, kind of figuring stuff out. And Amy, who was the set designer, she had us take pictures of our flat. So like the things that you see in there, like from books to artwork, is stuff that Lena and myself had said that we had liked.
Wow.
Down to you know, the Goldie Williams, the bad bitch photo. That's literally in my kitchen. Like I've had that photo for like years. Like,
there was one room in the house that I loved. I guess it looked like a reading room, but it also looked like a hallway, because it's like a alcove or whatever, where it's just a bunch of books. You go up this. I was just like, where is this house? And then when they said, oh, that's a set, boo. And I was like,
it doesn't exist.
It's
a house of dreams. It's not real. It's amazing.
So like, you've done the Doctor Who's, the end of the effing world, the rise of the Skywalkers, the small axes. You know, it's you know, you've hit the ground running, and we love to see it. But you know, now you're at Master of None. How do you think Master of None fits in with where you are at in your career right now?
Gosh, I think it just shows a different. What I really enjoy, and what I'm enjoying at the moment, is trying to learn and embrace different styles of performance, and you know, from understanding, you know, end of the effing world and what that tone was and what dry humor means, to doing, you know, small acts and what that means, or Skywalker and doing like a big kind of franchise and what performer you need to be for that to service that story. Master of None just kind of is like another route for me to understand a different aspect of where I'm at right now performance wise. And it was just, for me, it was like it felt like a stripping bare. Sometimes it feels like when you're playing a character, you're putting stuff on. And sometimes it feels like when you're playing a character, you're taking stuff off. And if Master of None was one or the other, I think it was me kind of being like, actually, like, this needs less performance. This needs like less character. This just needs to be me. And so for this, I didn't really feel like I was acting that much. I mean, it made it easier because like I was English in it, you know, when you add on an accent, that obviously like changes stuff. And that's another thing I loved being English in it, and having two Black people who were from two different spaces in the same space. You know, I think it's, I love doing the other stuff, but I think it's something that I think we can play around with more in the industry, is having the Black diaspora and people of color in general coming from different areas and coming together, because that's the world that we live in.
Hell yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, just look at the makeup of Master of None. You have two Asian guys who created it. You have a queer woman of color who wrote, you know, you have you who are, it's just, I love to see like the celebration of color.
It's so cool.
That's what we get excited about here is to see stuff like that. Naomi, another thing that we're really excited about, and I'm just going to switch gears a little bit, is it was announced recently that you will be portraying the iconic Whitney Houston.
Okay, Whitney.
In her biopic. You don't understand how big of a
Amanda is like the number one Whitney fan.
I am just her biggest fan. I listen to her greatest hits album like all the time.
Yeah, so, me too.
And you talked about a little bit about like feeling pressure, you know, as you continue to elevate in your career. So I want to ask you, where is your head? Like, how are you feeling about taking on this role? Like, where is your head?
Oh my gosh, it's around and up and down, and it's a different kind of muscle that I'm learning how to use, you know, and I've never done a biopic before, let alone the biopic
anticipated. Yes.
You know, so I think like it's just a bit, you know, I've been able to sit with this knowledge before everyone else knew for a while, and it's taking me a second to get used to it, but also to kind of figure out how I want to tell the story and what is my artist, like, you know, I'm trying to separate what is to try and please people, but also what is my voice in this? Like, how do I take ownership? Because at the end of the day, I'm not Whitney Houston as much as I would love to be.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I'm telling a story about this amazing woman, and I want to celebrate her, and I want to show the world how much she gave and how brilliant her light was. And that's where my focus is just making sure people leave the cinema feeling like, wow, that woman was special.
Yeah. Whoa. I cannot wait.
We can't wait.
I cannot wait.
What song are you going, are you looking forward to singing? Queen of the Night?
Oh my gosh.
That's a good yes. What's your go-to Whitney song?
Like, what's your go-to?
Okay, you know what's crazy? There's like literally, so I did a like an interview with the newspaper here years ago. And when I was auditioning for Whitney, one of my agents came up and they were like, oh my gosh, like one of their friends had like found the interview, and it said like, what is your karaoke song of choice? And I said, I want to dance with somebody.
That's it.
That,
I'm not even lying.
But that is such a good karaoke song.
It's the perfect karaoke. It goes, it's like,
and especially when the breakdown comes in where you're, don't you want to dance? Say you want to
dance. It is impossible to stand still or sit still, and that song comes on. Like, even if you cannot, like, you, something is going to move. You are going to get up.
That for real, because I have one story about, so I was at a rehearsal dinner for a wedding at someone's house.
Really? Yeah.
Of course we're Filipino, so we have to have the karaoke. So amen. They're like, we're gonna karaoke. And then they're all, Dino, you go first, because she's a karaoke gal. And I was all, bitch, put on, don't you want, you know,
I want to dance with somebody.
And then at first I was all, you know what? The aunties and uncles are here. We need to calm down. But then I just stripped away.
It is impossible.
And you're like, and if somebody loves you.
Oh my God, girl.
If we could fast forward to when the movie releases right now, able to fast forward, I'm so looking forward to see you wear that cape and crown singing Queen of the Night. I want to run to you.
Oh my God, that's my song.
To you.
When she, oh my God, that music video.
I know. I think that's the craziest thing though, is like, I keep on finding myself, especially like, when I'm in prep time, which is what I'm in right now, trying to figure out how to do this, Like, I sometimes watch the videos and then I get distracted because I love her so much that I just end up watching the videos.
You go down the rabbit hole in her videos. Like,
okay, now it's time to research. Now it's time to do my job. And then you just end up sitting there watching 5 hours of what you
And you will.
The amount of times I've just watched an interview or her singing and I'm just crying because I just love her. And like, learning about her is just, it's amazing. She's just so amazing.
We are so looking forward to you killing that role, girl.
Thank you so much.
But other than that, is what else is next for you? What is there anything you can tell us? Like, are you, I mean, you're, you said you're a writer. Do you have anything? Do you have anything that you're writing?
You want to just tell us now?
I wrote a little song, song.
Okay.
It's like I finished it and we are putting it out into the world and
there you go.
Seeing what happens. And it's a cool, I can't tell you what the story is, but it just dropped into the top of my head and then it came out on the page and listen, if this, this thing gets bought, man, people are in for a set. I'm really excited about it. Okay.
We are just looking forward to everything you do.
Thank you, man. I hope I don't disappoint.
No. Masters of None, you definitely did not disappoint, girl. So I think everybody will see that. So we like to wrap up this interview with this fun segment we call the Facts or the FAQs, just random fun questions to end everything with. So your first question is, what was your first concert?
Oh my gosh, Beyonce.
Really?
Oh wait, it was Destiny's Child, sorry.
Okay.
Oh, it was Destiny's Child.
Must make the distinction. It was Destiny's Child, their last tour.
Okay.
Oh, that's actually good. That's a good one.
Really amazing. Yeah, I dressed up to the nines, which at that point wasn't that great.
Come on, House of Darion.
I don't know. Also, it's like, why you dress up for a concert?
For concerts,
because nobody's watching you.
Nobody's watching. Yeah. Let's just...
You see, I remember going to concerts back in the day when people would be wearing like very tight fitting bodcon dresses.
And I'm literally like they're about to jump on stage. Where are you going with that?
Okay, so Naomi, okay, so let's just say Disney Plus comes to you and says, hey, we want you to star, create, and write a Jana series, and we are giving you an unlimited budget, and you can hire anyone you want.
Oh my
gosh.
Who
is starring with you, and who is show running?
Who is show running? Okay, showrunner Issa Rae.
Oh my god.
Wouldn't that be sick? Wouldn't that be so sick?
That would. Yes. I'm for it.
And who is starring? I feel like I would obviously John is gonna show up. He doesn't have to because he's a big old star, so he doesn't have to be in the whole thing, but he can just pop in. I can give him a call, be like, John, come true, man.
Yeah.
Not done with us yet.
With Issa Rae, I'm sure he'll do it.
Yeah, right?
Issa Rae's already, he'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll do it. And then I would probably, the first thing that came to mind, I would love to work with Michael B. Jordan.
I could see this.
Yeah.
And of course, Billy Dee has to show up. Billy Dee.
Of course, Billy Dee. I mean, it's going to be Jana and Billy Dee going through the universe.
That's how it ended in Skywalker. So when they teased that, I was just like, oh, okay, I'm here for what's going to happen.
Man.
So
let's put it out there.
Spoke it into the universe. Issa Rae has been on our podcast.
She has.
Oh my god. You know what's crazy? I'm just like, sometimes I think, oh my gosh, Issa Rae is probably going to watch Master of None and then she's going to know what my face looks
so.
Like.
I think so. Yes.
And then you're going to have the series just is going to be called Jana, you know, on Disney Plus. Star Wars : Jana. Jana.
That's it. Jana.
Okay.
Jana. Yeah. But
with her, with that woolly mammoth that you ride. I don't know.
Yeah, with the Orback. It was called.
What is it called? Orback.
Orback.
And it's like this, a furry horse.
Furry space horse. Proper Star Wars style.
A woolly mammoth. Come on, riding a woolly mammoth.
I like a woolly mammoth.
Okay. Okay. Next question. What is one talent you wish you would possess?
Oh gosh, so many. I wish I could possess the talent of being organized and keeping a tidy house.
That's a talent. No, seriously.
That is a talent. Literally yesterday, dude, I was like, I got up and I looked at my house and I was like, Nay, you've got to get your stuff together. My sister keeps on going, Nay, you need a cleaner, man. You can't. I'm messy.
With like all these people who like, you know, Instagramming and whatever, I'm like, and they we see their houses in the background and you're like, oh, does it look like that all the time?
Right.
Like this frame that you're seeing right here is the only neat place in my yard.
Right now there's trash right all around. And then there's, you know, the rock is right here too. So don't forget that.
Look, wait, I can show you this. I got a bed sheet right there that's like drying on my door.
That's like, I admire like the people who like, how could you make your house look like it's a West Elm app?
Like that tidy lady on Netflix. I can't remember her name.
Marie Kondo.
How did you figure all this stuff out? Like how to like make things and fold things and like, put things away. Like, how do you know how
I just know I should have my stuff.
Yeah.
My Marie Kondo obsession lasted like a month. Like I was all, I'm going to fold.
A lot of people did.
What gives me joy?
And then I was all, everything in this damn house brings me joy. That's why I'm all
folded. I know, me too. That's why I have all this stuff. And I can't get rid of anything.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so it's my turn. Okay, so... What is your barometer, or how can you tell if someone has a sense of humor?
Oh gosh, how can I tell? It's like, what if they make me laugh? It's hard. I think like people who are like, I just love people who are like super self-aware and like, who are like observant. I think like the people who make me laugh are people who are just like, honest.
Mm. Yeah.
Honesty. I've made some friends recently who are just so honest, and it's just like they literally have been laughing for the last week. That makes sense.
Because like we recently had Z-Way on, and like she's so hilarious, but and she's super honest.
Yes, just honest. Very honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because then you're just like, oh yeah, no, I think the same thing, and that's
exactly. Or you're like, oh, I can't believe you just said that, but like,
yeah.
That's actually really funny.
Like, I agree.
Yeah, I agree, and that's okay. Yeah. This is a would you rather one. Would you rather lose all your money and valuables, or all the pictures you've ever taken?
All the pictures I ever taken. Yeah. I don't take many pictures. That was easy.
Yeah, that was like, I was like, yeah, that's pretty easy.
What if like you lost all the pictures you've ever taken and you kind of, and they'll never return? Like you have no backup, nothing ever.
I'm okay with that. Like I've got pictures on my mind. Also, like whenever I look at photos of myself, like if I look at them too long, I find something wrong with them. So like get rid. I don't need them.
Yeah. Do y'all still have like a shoebox or a box of photos? Like from my a legitimate have, yeah. old camera.
Yeah, my parents have a photo album still, photos taken like in eight, like back in the day. And we still look through them
I still have a box of photos underneath my bed of like,
oh wow,
when film photos, like when I used to have of like, you know, oh my god, when you have to drop off your canister of film at the
and then you have to wait
a week to get
there. Right. Oh my gosh. Or you could pay for the hour.
That's the thing. Like I actually even like I still think in my dad's house there is like still film canisters that no one could be asked to take to the store. And it's just like lost it's photos that like, no one's just like, ah.
I know that college I took a photography class and we developed our own film and everything like that. I still have an undeveloped role of film that I'm very curious.
You should find. Do they still do? Yeah. They still? Can you still take it to CVS?
There's a CVS around the corner. I think they only do digital. I think you have to actually.
You might have to like post it in. You have to maybe like. There's a website for everything.
Yeah.
I know. Seriously, you can send it in.
Maybe I'll just develop it myself. I've learned.
You go, you do your thing.
I was like, I don't have time to build myself a whole dark room,
right? With the red light, do you have the red light?
That's hella extra, and I'm not about to do that.
Yeah, no one has just leave the canister under the bed.
Okay, Naomi, our final. Yeah. Question is, is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream that you think people need to know about and deserves more recognition and shine?
Yes, so many. First one that comes to mind is Anthony Welsh, who actually is in Master of None. He plays Alicia's friend.
Okay,
I'm trying not to give too much
away. But we know who you're talking about.
And he is an incredible actor and a very good friend of mine, and I think he deserves all the jobs, and it's not even that he works a lot. It's not that he's like not, you know,
working. But
I would love to see him skyrocket.
I think it's just there's so many that are like people. I think communities know who they are, but the dominant culture doesn't know who they are.
And that's the thing. And I mean, like, I guess in the UK as well, we have our theater and stuff like that, and he is incredible. He's been in
everything.
And he's so good, and I'm just like, oh, that man, when the larger world like gets in touch with that dude, they're gonna have some big old treats. That man is one of my favorite actors.
Love to hear, love to see it, love everything.
Naomi, thank you so much for being here. I cannot wait till the world gets to see this show.
When Jana comes out with Issa Rae showrunning.
Issa!
Come through, Issa girl.
It's just kind of like the next logical step for Issa.
Issa Rae can do literally anything.
And also, Insecure is ending soon. She has something. She has to get busy.
I'm sure. But thank you so much, Naomi, for being with us. Yes, thank you. Nice to meet you. We definitely cannot wait. With your screenplay, all that stuff, we can't wait. Yeah.
And I know it's nighttime in London, right? So good night. Yeah. It's still
good night, my darlings.
It's still lunchtime here, kind of. So we have a good ways to go. But good night, Naomi.
Good night, and thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.